Welcome to our Gold to podcast, where we take you behind the scenes with authors of many different writing styles. I'm Lucinda Hawksley, and today we're delving into history writing. I do hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to find out more, go to www.goldster.co.uk and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Goldster Inside Story. I'm really pleased to have here today Alison Hill, who is the author of this new biography, just came out on the 1st of September on Pauline Gower, who was an amazing woman. As it says here in the subtitle, pioneering leader of the Spitfire Women. Now, Alison, I met you a few years ago when you were first telling me about your research. It's great to see that this book has come out. Welcome to Goldster. It's so lovely to have you on today.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
I've been watching with interest on social media your progress since I first met you. And I'll say I met Alison when she was studying at St. Mary's University in Twickenham. And I was the writing fellow at that university. So it's been really great for me to see you on social media and see how your ideas have evolved and what's happened with this book. So tell us who these women are behind you, because I believe one of them is Pauline Gower. And how did you get interested in all this?
Indeed. Well, Pauline Gower is right behind me, and her fellow engineer is Dorothy Spicer, who create a core to the book, really, because it's their story I want to tell as much as Pauline's. I first came across Pauline Gower, quite a little story, really. I live near Hampton Court, and there's a lovely bookshop, everything, called Hampton Court Emporium, grand title for a quite dusty old bookshop. And I was in there with my younger son, and I saw a book called Spitfire Women by Giles Whittle. And the title caught my eye. I thought, I didn't even know women flew Spitfires. And it really caught me. And I bought the book, a pristine copy, took it home. And I realized that they didn't just fly Spitfires. They flew Wellingtons, Hurricanes, Mosquitoes. And there were 164 of the women who flew during the Second World War with the Air Transport Auxiliary. And it was a fascinating, I'd recommend the book, a really fascinating overview of the whole era and whole background and how this came about, with the main woman being Pauline Gower. So I read bits about her then and read about all the other amazing women. And there are lots of stories to tell. So after a while, I thought it'd be really good to put their stories into a poetry collection. I'd written two previous collections and always written poetry. And decided that, yes, there was really room for a project here. And so I actually got Arts Council funding to do that project, to do the research, to produce the book, and then to take those stories and poems into schools and libraries and museums, and to give readings and to present about those women. So from buying a book in a bookshop, this whole project came about. And a few years then, I wasn't quite ready to leave the subject, and I probably wasn't quite ready to leave Pauline. So I decided maybe I'll try a play. So I went to the Rose Theatre and did a short course, and I think the play was called Spitfire Trail. I think it might have worked better as a film. It couldn't quite get off the ground literally as a play idea, but I wrote a short play. And then I thought, well, actually, I need a new challenge. So I always wanted to do an MA, and then I came across it very at the last minute, St. Mary's, just up the road, and did a first novel creative writing MA. And the subject again was the Spitfire Women. And my protagonist was Nancy, who quite a few of my friends who we still write and talk, got to know Nancy quite well. And the book was called Flying Over Clouds. There I met Lucinda, and she showed us all her beautiful biographies and quite an inspiration in a way. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But again, the book, you know, developed. I did my course, got the MA, and was left with then three courses of a novel. And during that time, while I'd been doing my degree, there was quite an interest in that subject area. And so two or three novels came out pretty similar to the idea I had. And I was getting stuck, and I thought, this is not quite where I want to take this. So back to another form, I thought biography. And I'd had the idea, and then I'd thought about Pauline. And this was just before lockdown, and I'd been in touch with one of Pauline's sons all through this process. She had twin sons. And one of her sons lives in Australia. And I'd sent him poems from the collection, and he was very happy with that. This is Spitfire's collection. And so we were in touch. When I came to think about the biography idea, I thought, well, I'll ask him. He'd already collected memories of his mother. Fantastic. Written a book called A Harvest of Memories. I'll come again to why it was called that a little bit later. But this book was now out of print. It was written in 1995. amazing launch that was involved planes and flower bombs and all that. But now this book's out of print. So I thought, well, her story is getting lost here. Other members, other women have written their stories and other people have written about these women. So I thought really Pauline did deserve her own story. And when I went to talk to her, I talked about it. She said, that great idea. And that's how this came about. So, yeah.
Fantastic. And it's so great because, as you say, you've tried so many different media, writing media. I really hope you're going to write that as a film. We'll go back to the play because I think it's really fascinating. Yeah. And the fact that you've seen how her life just kind of translates into all these different forms of writing, it shows really what a huge personality she is, which is what really comes across
in
the book. And I love the fact you said, you know, you didn't feel ready to leave Pauline, because I think I know this from writing biography. They want you to tell their story. And I'm not trying to sound like a medium. I'm not saying that.
No.
I'm doing table rapping or anything. But these people, they want you to tell their lives. And I think it just gets hold of you, doesn't it, Alison?
It does. And this, I have a piece of paper that I wrote back in 2016. I've just got titled Lucinda at the top. And your advice was you have to love your subject. Research thoroughly and tell people you're a writer. But the first thing was you have to love your subject. And then they do get to you. It's like your lead character, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm really glad that helped. Okay, well, I feel like I helped to bring this to birth. Now, isn't this a gorgeous cover, everybody? And I was just talking to Alison about this image here because I thought this was a vintage picture. And I said how much I loved this. I'm going to hold this right up so you can see it. So, Alison, tell us about how this picture came about, this beautiful illustration.
Yes, very much so. The History Press knew all along they'd been a great publisher to work with. They knew what I was trying to do with this book and the vision, and they were very wanting to put her story forward as a pioneering woman of the 30s and 40s. So they came up with the image and the idea of vintage. And we had the photograph there, but there was something not quite, it needed a little bit more. And a person who really helped me in the process, who lent me Pauline Gower's own book, Women with Wings. Again, it's like gold dust. There are probably a handful of them around. And I connected with her on Facebook and she said, oh, I can lend you a copy. So it arrived beautifully bubble wrapped just before Christmas, a year or so ago. And it's like, because I really needed to read this book to hear Pauline's own voice. Otherwise, I think that was I really needed that part of the process. So this book arrived and I kept in touch with Di Abel-White, who's a bomber command researcher. And we were talking about the cover towards the end of the process. And she said, oh, my daughter's an artist and she can probably do an illustration for you. And I thought that'd be wonderful. I said, I'm not sure about the budget here. And she said, no. So anyway, Rosie, her very talented daughter, redrew a photograph to bring out more of what we wanted from the character for this photo. So over one weekend, we had this image and it was just perfect. So great thanks to Rosie and Di Abel-White there.
And did the illustrator actually, what did she feel like when she was creating this? Did she feel a connection?
I think she does have a strong connection. She's worked on World War II stuff before, but I think, yes, I think she was really pleased to bring that more to life and to sort of know that it was going to go out there and, you know, inspire other generations with this illustration.
That's nice. Okay, so tell us, for people who haven't read the book, who was Pauline Gower?
She was the lead pilot. She led the women at the Air Transport Auxiliary during the Second World War, starting from that point, which was a civilian organization set up at the outset of the Second World War to ferry the planes, starting off with Tiger Moss, the trainer planes, to where they were needed, basically, throughout the war, to the RAF bases, from the maintenance units. In some ways, they were test pilots because they were flying new-built planes or planes that had been rebuilt. And it was mainly going to be an organisation for male pilots. But there were lots of women pilots who had the hours, they had the money to learn to have flied and flew. And so Pauline Gower was headhunted, basically, to start this section. And she originally wanted, 14 pilots. She was allowed to have 8. And she recruited these. They were called the First 8. Capital F, capital E, because it was the first of this kind that, you know, the women flying RAF planes were before they're not even being allowed in one. So that was the start of her non-military, but flying career. And I'll come on to that later. But prior to that, in the 1930s, Pauline Gower was brought up in Tunbridge Wells in Kent. Her father was a quite a prominent politician, quite a name for himself and many different things. And she was sent to a convent, Sacred Heart, Beechwood Sacred Heart in Tunbridge Wells, although her family lived in Tunbridge Wells. At the time, they wanted their daughters, they had two daughters, to have an education, which was quite, you know, ahead of its time and good in that way. So Pauline had a great time there. She was known as a glittering figure at this convent school, but probably always wanted to break a few boundaries. She climbed every tree in the grounds. And I've been to the school grounds, and some of those trees are probably still there. They've just grown a lot taller.
How amazing. It's wonderful.
And the building is amazing too. It's a little bit crumbling now, and it's just changed hands. But and she also climbed out of every dormitory window, apparently. That's from first-hand people that were there at school with her. And so she was, you know, she's looked up to, and there was a sense that she was going to have adventures. So she left school and she did a season, but didn't want to just go into the wedding market, and nor did she want to just do, you know, become a wife. So she told her parents over breakfast one day that she wanted to learn to fly. And there was probably a bit of a silence, and her father said, well, you know, we're not going to pay you to break your neck kind of thing, and stopped her allowance. So she gave violin lessons. She did lots of things she could to, as lots of women did at that time, to pay for lessons. And he came around eventually. I think he realised that, you know, if he didn't support her, she'd probably go and break her neck. And some, so he on her 20th birthday, he did buy her a plane, a second-hand plane. So she learned to fly at Stag Lane, initially in Reading and then at Stag Lane, where she met her great friend Dorothy Spicer, who was training as an engineer. And at this point, they were both kind of breaking records. They were both pioneering, you know, this Stag Lane in North London. They would have been full of men, male pilots, male engineers. And so they met and they became very good friends. And they also met Amy Johnson there. And the three of them also were good friends. And in fact, they when they came to write their own book, Women with Wings, that was the only time they almost fell out because they couldn't decide who was going to write the main part of the book and who was going to write the foreword. The sort of the foreword and the afterwards. Pauline won. That's part of her character, really. She won, so she wrote the main part. And Amy Johnson wrote the foreword to the book. So it's a wonderful book in itself, of sort of partnership and negotiation, really. And so that's where it all started for her. And then her and Pauline decided that they didn't want a sort of a dull office job. So they set up an airwoman, the first woman taxi service in the country. Bearing in mind that Dorothy had also burnt all her licenses by this time, the first woman in the world to do that, and Pauline had already broken a couple of records. So they set up in a field. And this is where I think when I spoke to you, Lucinda, before I started writing, you said, you know, everyone wants to know that Pauline was in air circuses of the 30s. You know, there's huge stories there. And, you know, some of the things they got up to when I read in her own memoir, it's just fascinating. You know, she took up so many passengers. I've got here. She took up 33,000 passengers.
That's incredible. Wow.
All in her logbook. So 33,000 passengers.
Obviously missed.
And she clocked up more than 2,000 hours. So she was, you know, she was out there in the aviation world and she was sort of, you know, quite a strong character in that way. So she was an obvious choice to lead a Spitfire, the women of the Air Transport Auxiliary. But she also got political persuasions and she was very good at negotiating and quietly getting her own way, I think. So that was how it started, really, and that was her life up until then. And she...
I wonder why it is that we all know about Amy Johnson, but we don't know about Pauline, about Dorothy, about all these other incredible women. She's say 145 women who...
164 women.
64
and four engineers, so...
Yeah, you know, we don't know anything about them. The only one we ever hear about is Amy Johnson, perhaps because she died. I don't know. Why do you think that is? Why do you think she's the only one that people focus on as if she was the only female pilot?
I think she caught people's imagination because she is the girl from Hull who decided in almost overnight she's going to fly to Australia.
Yes.
As you do. And I was very lucky enough to read a couple of weeks ago at Croydon Airport where she started off her flight.
Yes.
There's some amazing pictures there of, you know, her just taking off in this small plane. And you're looking at it thinking, where would you actually think that you could just get in this plane and go to Australia?
It is incredible, isn't it? These pioneers, I mean, things that we just do without even thinking about. Yes, there was someone who did that first. And what an extraordinary achievement. Yeah. Indeed. So these women, I know you've met quite a lot of female pilots. So tell us about your research and the last few years.
Sure. For Citizen Spitfires, I was lucky enough, unfortunately, I think are no longer any with us anymore. But I was lucky enough to meet Joy Lofthouse, Molly Rose, I spoke to on the phone, a really memorable conversation. And then Mary Ellis, who really sparked my imagination. I met her a few times, lovely lady. And I was fortunate to be flown over to meet her on the Isle of Wight, which she found, you know, really interesting. She wanted to know all about the plane we'd come over in and everything about the flight. And she was 100 at this time. And she walked, you know, without a stick, no glasses, just an amazing woman. Wow. Lived on her own still. And she lived in Sandown near the airport or the airfield that she'd managed for 20 years after the war. So very invested in interest in this patch of land, really. And the Spitfires or the planes used to dip their wings as they flew over her cottage. So I went to visit her there several times, and it was really memorable and very poignant. And this copy actually is got a little sticker that's signed by Mary. I met her at White Waltham, and she signed the poem for her in the book. So
that's just fantastic. So tell us about Sisters in Spitfires. Tell us all about that. We get that.
Yeah, well, that's sort of set into five sections. It was published by Indigo Dreams Publishing. And I wanted to talk about their lives first. There's a section on their private lives before the war, just to sort of a flavour of all their interests. And they came from 25 countries. You know, they weren't just UK women. They came from over 25 countries to fly and do their bit for the war effort. And then making the headlines. I mean, the headlines themselves, I'm sure you'd appreciate, Lucinda, just gave way to some funny poems, really. So let's have a look. Courage counts, not glamour. In defense of ferry women was one of them. And, you know, they were doing something quite radical. They were getting in planes and they were flying to the country. And, you know, the first photo shoot, these photos might be quite familiar, was the first day St. Pauline lined up, and they had to get into these heavy flying suits, Sidcot suits, which they probably would have flown in after that for press days. And there's one particular picture of Pauline in a tiger moth, and the silhouette of the hat of the photographer is in the photo.
Well,
brilliant photo then.
Brilliant.
And of course they had to run or scramble to their tiger moths, and the press photographer didn't get it. So they said, could you just do that a second time, you know, for the better photo? And these were very heavy suits with parachutes on their back.
Oh, wow.
so much press there that was of interest.
How fascinating. And now you write poetry. You are a poet yourself. And Pauline was a poet.
She was.
Did that give you a connection to her, do you think?
Massively. Because I think she was always a bit tongue-in-cheek about her poetry. She might have called it light poetry. Her two collections were called Piffling Poems for Pilots. They were launched, and she had, they were published. And her son in 1995 as well collated them into one volume and republished them. So they can be found if you look online for them. And again, I was lucky enough, I found three volumes. I gave one to Mary Ellis when I went to visit her on the Isle of Wight. And she
brilliant. Did she love it?
She did, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's really moving.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do with the biography, I wanted to put some of Pauline's poems in there with her son's permission, which I did. And then to put some of mine in just to give those stories again, you know, to weave the poems through the narrative.
Would you like to read some of these? I'm just going to put your website in the chat here.
Yes, sure. Yes. I thought I'd like to read one from Pauline, and it might give you a flavour of just her sense of humour, which really comes across in her own work and all the things I've really read about her. Probably getting quite a dry sense of humour. So this is called The Stranger Pilot. From some far continent he came to teach us how to fly. We'd not even heard his name, from whence he came or why. He told us of all the things he'd done at least 100 times, and all about the cups he'd won in distant foreign climes. From tales he told, we had to grant he was no also-ran. With wonder, we exclaimed, you can't, but he replied, I can. It was a joy to tease and bait this pilot of renown, and each in turn would lie in wait and try to do him down. One day we caught him by the sea. That was the last of him. The Mortius, well, R.I.P., the blighter couldn't swim.
Fantastic.
And then I wanted to read this one to Molly Rose, who I did speak to, and I've spoken to her son too. A very modest woman. She flew many planes during the war and flew throughout the war. And her husband was taken prisoner of war, and there's a whole story, there's detail in here about her lives with him, a life with him, and how, you know, her experiences of life in the ATA. And she told me she met him at a dance. I did ask her, when I talked to her, I didn't want to ask her too many questions, but I said, was there a piece of music that reminded you of your time in the ATA or those war years?
Good question.
And she said, oh, yes. She said, my dear, she said, Glenn Miller, In the Mood. Do you know it? And I said, yes. And I said, that's really evocative of the time. So this was the poem for her called Spitfire Dance. Halfway between runway and romance, mind trained firmly on the here and now, that patch of sky ahead. In limbo, waiting to take off, sometimes dying to land, it was a feat of balance, keeping a weather eye on social ops. He'd asked his dark-haired friend to look out for her, dance after dance, claiming her when he came off duty. She'd approached the floor with caution, wondering if this particular flight signaled the start of the rest of her life. And it did, because her and her then husband, they were married for 56 years after that dance.
Well, both these poems have got things, comments coming into the chat. Thank you very much, everybody. Brilliant poem. And That's Amazing, which is about your story of meeting them.
Good. And the final section of Sisters in Spitfire was called Leaving Legacies. I wanted to remind people that 1 in 10 had lost their lives in the ATA, men and women. And some, you know, obviously very young, as many, all the other thousands obviously killed during the war. And so I wanted to just highlight the fact of the role they played and, you know, what they'd done in the war. And this particular poem just came from a line I read in a biography, I think, of how Diana Bonato Walker, who features on the front, had kept a fellow pilot's, or she'd been given the uniform after her death. So this poem is called Honor Salmon's Pale Blue Shirt. Hung in Diana's wardrobe for nearly 50 years, brushing against her sway of silk dresses, poignant memories of a pilot who helped a novice before floundering on high ground, caught in the English weather, almost home. The pale blue wool was soft to the touch, much softer than ATA issue, and fitted Diana perfectly. Her family had wanted her things to be shared. She burst into tears the only time she tried it on, alone in her digs. Honor's blue-grey eyes twinkled back from the mirror. It was too much to bear. She remembered with pride the young first officer who befriended her, taking it down now and then, shaking out the clouds, before slipping it back between shot silk blues. Honor's presence lingering, her kindly words drifting down the decades.
That's beautiful. Really beautiful. Thank you.
Just so to say that First Officer Honor Salmon was the granddaughter of Sir Isaac Pitman of shorthand fame.
All right.
She died on the 19th of February, April 1943, and she was just 30.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That is very, very moving. When you were researching these stories, I was thinking as you read that, the sad resonances at the moment with what's happening in Ukraine. Do you feel that very much when you're watching the news? Do you think about, you know, what your women went through and what people are going through now?
It's universal, isn't it? Loss. And I think, you know, war brings all those same things across. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's just, you know, listening to, you know, we tend to think about the Second World War, obviously, as, you know, being part of history and before, you know, most of us here were even thought of. But of course, now we're living through a time of war, which for me feels like a really extraordinary thing and awful to me. I know there's been probably war all through my life in some part of the globe, but it feels just very close in Europe. Mm. You know, frightening echo of what was happening in the 30s. And I wonder if you feel that when you're researching, does it, thinking back to your research now when you watch the news, listen to the news?
It does, because obviously we're frightening much closer to these wars than the Second World War now, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very quite a sobering times. So when I posted about this on Twitter, people seem to love the word Spitfire, because I did a hashtag on Spitfire. So what is it about Spitfires and what is the Spitfire Society? Tell us about all that.
Well, the Spitfire to the women, just briefly going to that, was that they all loved it.
Do you know why?
Yes, lots of reasons why. Mainly because lots of them said it was a ladies' plane. It was a snug cockpit, a snug fit. And I've got some quotes in here from some of them, Diana Bonato Walker, but they felt like they could get into it, that it was almost part of them. And Diana, they sort of, actually, I have two quotes at the beginning of the poetry collection from Lettice Curtis, who was a very forthright woman, blue stocking, Cambridge, very down to earth. But she waxed lyrical. She said, to sit in the cockpit of a Spitfire, belly wider than one's shoulders, with the power of the Merlin at one's fingertips, was a poetry of its own.
That's really lovely.
And then Jackie Moggridge, who a very big character, said, a few seconds later, I found myself soaring through the air in a machine that made poetry of flight.
So many of them.
So although, of course, it was a fighting machine and it was obviously helped win the war, the fact was that they were able to enjoy it so much and deliver so many. I mean, Mary Ellis delivered 400 Spitfires in her life, in her time. It was just, it was a very maneuverable plane, very light to touch and sensitive, and they loved it.
Fascinating. I wouldn't have ever thought about the fact that it was felt like a woman's plane. How interesting. So did the men complain that it was too cramped? Was that a...
I don't know. I think they liked it too, but probably for different reasons. Yeah. Yeah.
And so have you learned to fly?
No, but never say no, because lots of these women flew. They started flying, you know, later in life. I did was going to have a flying lesson once, but it was a time when there were quite a few accidents in small planes. So I postponed that. Never say never.
But I wondered if interviewing all these women had made you want to.
Because it has, yes, I will. I'm sure I will. And I'm a member of, although a lay member of the British Women Pilots Association. So I'm sure I will at some point. But the Spitfire Society was set up. You asked about that. It's a really interesting, it's for anyone really with an interest in the plane. It was founded in 1984 by the late group captain David Green, and its original purpose to link people throughout the world whose lives have been affected by the Spitfire. It's got charitable status, and now it runs lectures and awards, and there's lots there to people to find out if they're interested.
I'm just putting the link to the Spitfire Society.
Yeah.
In there if anybody else wants to have a look at it. And by the way, your last poem, Ruth, has said it, very moving. So if you hadn't noticed that, sorry.
Thank you.
So yes, I see they do all sorts of events at the Spitfire Society and things. So
yeah.
Excellent.
Well, when you get a little badge with, obviously,
a Spitfire on it.
Yeah.
So when you started writing about these women or looking into them, which came first, your interest in that era, or was it literally just finding this book that then made you start looking at that? Or had you always had a fascination for the Second World War?
I have got family members in the RAF, and I suppose that was always of interest in flying. And my mother had looped the loop in her 60s maybe or 70s when she shouldn't have done really because of the fitness levels, but she enjoyed it so much. So I think there's a bit of a family connection with the sky.
Yeah.
And then I think everything just came together, really, the interest and the thought that Pauline wrote poetry, I think, was a real inspiration in the fact that, you know, and quite a few of the women did. It wasn't just Pauline. They just turned to writing as a form of, you know, entertainment.
And so you're a poet, and then now you write biography. What was that transition like?
Interesting. Obviously, a much longer form and a very factual form, and I've managed to weave some poems in. But challenging also, because I was writing during lockdown when lots of the archives were closed, and challenging also to first find a voice. Great believer in going to find books about writing. So I found Hermione Lee, a biography, a very short introduction, which is a really, really...
Oh, yes, it's a really good book.
Excellent book, because it's just a nutshell, isn't it? Just really tiny little bits of advice. And then I went back to read this after I'd written it to see where I got to on track. But I would really recommend that. I read lots of biographies just to see how people wrote and how they approached their subjects. Cradle to Grave seems probably the easiest one in this particular subject. So there were challenges, but it was a really enjoyable process as well.
And what did you find? So we've got a lot of people here who are aspiring writers, people who are working on the Goldster writing course. Tell us about your process then, because it was obviously such a different thing from writing poetry. Did you find it bewildering? Did you actually start just doing everything chronologically? Did you spend a long time trying to work out what you were going to do? Or was it just something that felt organic?
It's a little bit organic. Obviously, a lot more planning has to go into biography and you have to structure. So I think I wanted to get the structure fairly early on once I gathered the material. a great sort of step forward was when Pauline's son sent me some material from Australia during lockdown. And we were so relieved when it got there and no delays, because there wasn't a lot of first-hand source material. She died fairly young. There was her book and diaries. And eventually I did come to find those things. But what Michael sent me, Michael Fahey, was letters from the first launch, which was 25 years ago, 27 now. The letter form is almost non-existent now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you know, Lucinda, letters tell you so much about the person, you know, the way they scribbled around or their letterheads. You know, there was a whole archive there. There were three bound volumes. So that was an exciting point, because I thought, right, now I have lots of material here.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people no longer alive. So I was able to draw from those letters their impressions of Pauline. A lot of them had met her. There were still some of the ATA women who had written to Michael thanking him for the launch, or in his original research, giving him more impressions of Pauline. And Michael said, you know, you can use this material however you see fit, which was great, because it meant then I had another layer of history to add.
Yeah.
And I think probably the most daunting thing was sending the book, a draft or final draft, to Pauline's son and then waiting.
How was that? Did he enjoy? Has he given you feedback?
He sent me a lovely, once he'd read it, I was a bit, he didn't quite reply so quickly, but he sent me a lovely email, and I think he really appreciated that I brought a sort of rounded picture, I think, and really appreciated it.
Probably took him a while to read it, and he wanted to, because we tend to expect, you know, you send something and you think, oh God, I haven't read it yet. And you forget that actually it takes a while for someone to find the time to read a biography.
Quite
a long time to read.
Yes.
And I know exactly, I thought, oh, no, they must hate it. And then you discover that, no, they've just been taking time, as they should do, as any reader should do, to really read it. So, but it's that horrible.
But he was a fantastic support all the way through as well, which is
brilliant. Well, he must be thrilled to have his mother remembered in this way. Exactly. So did he feel a connection to it? So he's in Australia. Why did that happen?
I think it's just how he moved and lived his life and moved on after. Basic life there.
And do you think people in Australia are aware of who his mum was? Is this all something that he's talked about, do you think? Or
I'm not sure. I might need to ask those questions.
I think it's fascinating. I hope he's very proud of her.
And yeah, I hope so too, yes. I'm looking
maybe you'll get to go and do an event in Australia. There you are.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the events that you have done and the opportunities that writing about Pauline has given you.
A couple of weeks ago, my first reading event was at Croydon Airport. I don't know if anyone's local to Croydon, but I've lived 5 miles away or 9 miles away for many years. Never been. Didn't know there was so much history there in terms of it was a really important airport between the wars. Didn't know that Amy Johnson flew from there. And perhaps the most important thing or the most poignant thing was to go up with it's open once a month, so you can go along. And we had a really detailed tour after I'd done my talk. And one of Amy Johnson's bags is in the museum at the top.
Fantastic.
The airport. She died on an ATA flight. Her body was never recovered, but her two bags were. So one bag is in Croydon in the airport, and the other is in Hull Museum, where she lived when she was from. So that was like, oh, wow, that's Amy Johnson's bag there. As always happens, and I'm sure, Lucinda, you might know this, there's always someone in the audience that seems to have known somebody connected with your book or can offer you more. So it's like it's almost organic. So there were two pilots in the audience, at least two, who'd been taught by one of the ATA women.
Oh, wonderful.
To fly by one of the ATA women. So, yeah, lots of connections keep coming, which is great.
Well, that's great, because then you can do what I did with my Katie biography, which is people then got in touch and said, oh, I've never known who painted this painting before, like with paintings that we didn't know about and because they weren't in public collections. So then you can update your paperback, which is always very exciting. Right. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do if you get more information like that. That's the great thing about, because obviously it's come out in hardback and hopefully in a year or sometimes 18 months, the paperback will come out. And then if there's anything like that, you can add it in, which is just such a joy to be able to do. I got the chance to update my Katie biography about 10 years after it came out. And I just loved the fact that I'd gleaned new information because, as you've probably discovered, you never stop researching somebody when the book comes out. That's kind of the beginning, really. Yeah. And then you do get people getting in touch saying, oh, this happened, or I knew this person.
Yeah.
It's a real joy.
And also, yes, there was a piece in the RAF News and somebody got in touch. He's just about to turn 96. And I asked if I could get in touch because basically he'd been taught to fly by Pauline.
Wonderful.
Better. So now we're in touch and he sent me his memoir and, you know, which is a lovely real connection.
Yeah, fantastic. Those kind of connections are really brilliant. I mean, your biographical subjects are a lot closer to current times than mine. So sadly, I'm never going to find anyone who met Princess Louise. And met the baby. But, you know, it is fascinating if you can get those connections. Mm. So tell us about, I mean, you've done other things before you became a writer. Tell us about your career and how that has helped or hindered, and if you always wanted to be a writer or whether it just happened.
No, yes to the last question, definitely, always. And I think probably the jobs are always on the way to becoming a writer, so they're just a means of, you know. Yeah. But the jobs have always been actually quite related to writing. So I've worked in publishing for many years. I now work in communications. Those have always been related. And I think something I did, a nice part of my voluntary work, was I set up and ran a poetry music night for 10 years. And again, that's all about making connections. So that was a lovely time, lovely thing to do, and meet lots of poets and get people to come to our area and network. And just, yeah. So it all really feeds into writing.
It does. And of course, all the people you meet are just, you know, these connections that you can make. So tell us about the RAF Museum and what you've been doing with them.
Yes. Well, we've just today arranged, and I'll do an event there on Independent Women's Day. It's a National Women's Day in March. They will actually put on a talk around the book, an event. And prior to that, excitingly, I'm going to be able to sit in the Spitfire with the book and have a photo taken.
So you've got a photo shoot coming up.
Which is what I've got coming up, yeah.
Yeah. That's very exciting. And are these people glad that you brought Pauline kind of back from the dead, as it were?
I hope so. I think so, yes. I think, you know, there was a biography about her. There is her own book, but they're so hard to find.
Yeah.
You can update it. And what I wanted to do with the book also, I didn't mention this at the back, is there are interviews with contemporary pilots. And there's information about the British Women Pilots Association, which was set up after the war by the ATA women, and which now is there to inspire women, young girls to fly, to consider careers in aviation, the STEM subjects. So there's all that comes from this. And I wanted to put that into the book just to show really what Pauline's legacy was and the other women. It was their legacy to, you know, one of Pauline's expressions was every woman should learn to fly. And she'd probably say, oh, why not, if you came up with an objection? So, you know, why not do that? Why not consider engineering or becoming a pilot?
Yeah, absolutely. And sorry, I'm going to sneeze. That's enough to be uncomfortable. So when you're writing about these women and you feel that, you know, that they had a legacy there, do you feel very proud of the fact that you yourself are contributing to this legacy? I hope you do.
I think I do now. I think you're beginning to realise that, yes, it's just to keep this out there in the public and to keep what they did is really important. I think it's just all about keeping stories alive, in particular these women.
Yeah. Now, so you've come to kind of being a published writer very, very recently, and you've obviously spent a few years working on this. We have a few people, as I said, who will be watching this today, who are aspiring writers or people who've already written and published something and might be looking to do something else. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice you can give them? Because obviously you really thought about it for a long time and you've worked in publishing as well. Do you have any top tips you can pass on?
Well, one of them is yours, actually, to write something every day, which is what you told us, which is probably the most important, really, once you start a new project, to keep writing. It might just be a paragraph or two. I would try and write at a certain time of day, not that I've ever managed to do that, but I think that's something people do. Or actually write away from where you live, you know, anywhere, a cafe, or go to somewhere that's relevant to what you're writing, I found really, really useful.
Yes.
When I wrote the poems, you can't just sit really at your desk and write a poem. So I went to Tunbridge Wells, where Pauline was born. I went to the Rom graveyard to find her.
Yes. Tell us about the Rom graveyard. I love that story.
Well, I did everything by foot. So I went to Tunbridge Wells and I went to her school twice now, and the libraries. In the library in Tunbridge Wells are 50 scrapbooks that her father bequeathed to the library. And I think it was a Victorian thing to do, but people just binding all the press cuttings about himself. Everything went in there, about his daughters as well, and table napkins from their weddings and, you know, beautiful books.
Yeah.
That's a huge primary resource. So I spent a couple of days with those the first time around. And then I thought, well, I'll go, I've got time, I'll go and find the Gower grave. So I got on the bus to where I thought it was, but it was a much different graveyard. It was a Victorian graveyard. And I thought, this doesn't look quite right. And somebody, I walked around twice and somebody asked me if I was choosing my spot. and somebody said, I think Jane Eyre's brother was there, but I wasn't looking for Jane Eyre's brother. Jane Austen's.
It's Austen's brother.
Jane Austen's brother.
Because they're Jane Eyre's brother, maybe. But
Jane Austen's brother, yeah. So I looked at that with interest, but again, it wasn't what I'd come to look for. So I wrote a poem called The Royal Graveyard. And then last year when I went back to Tunbridge Wells, I found the right one, which was a really interesting experience. And if you do read the book, there's a little bit about that, finding the right grave.
It is. It's really amazing. I remember going in and discovering graves. You know, I've been writing about people and they're quite neglected and spending a day just kind of sorting out the graves, you know, cutting away weeds and, you know, taking down gardening gloves and things, and, you know, kind of and secateurs. And actually it just felt really beautiful to do something like that for somebody, just to look at a grave and think this hasn't been looked at for ages. Yeah. And now as I'm saying this, I feel real guilt that I haven't done it for years. But, you know, it is, there's something very connected about being there looking at that gravestone, particularly in many ways if it hasn't been looked at for a while, taken notice of.
One lovely thing, somebody from, I think, the Women's Engineering Society, which is quite important to Dorothy and Pauline, she asked me on Twitter where the grave was, and it was just before the book was coming out. And she'd got a preview copy, and she'd gone to the grave and took a photo of it with on the grave for me, which I thought was...
Really,
she actually, but she was in the graveyard, which is a huge graveyard, the Kent and Sussex Grave Cemetery. And she'd been asking me for direction. I didn't know who it was. She'd been asking me for directions and was almost about to give up. So I told her where it was. And because it's a big, it's a family grave. It's not just one person's. And so she took a picture of, which I thought was a really nice thing to do. It was like someone else following footsteps.
That is really lovely. So you go into schools and things, don't you? Do you find that when you talk about Pauline or the female pilots, how do children respond to that? Do they feel as you did and as I did before? I remember talking to you, they had no idea how many women flew. Do children have an idea, or are they always amazed by it?
I think they're always amazed, really. And I think, you know, they need to be told more. I think it probably seems quite a long time ago now. So it's the idea of flying, I think, rather than the war, I think we have to talk about, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The achievements, you know, being kind of such early pilots at a time that we all, even today, think it was dominated by men.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there was this incredible body of women. What do you find about going into schools? Do you like going into schools? And if so, what do you like about it?
I've done a few workshops, I think, writing workshops, and that's what I enjoy, getting people writing. And one I particularly remember, the one girl hadn't even been on the plane and she said, no, I haven't flown before. I was a little bit distracted to start with, but once we started talking about these women and what they'd done, I think she wrote something and surprised herself. And they actually, the teacher, the librarian, I remember, was also writing something, and I hadn't expected her to, but she'd written as well.
Fantastic. So she was obviously inspired by your exercise writing.
Hope so. Yeah.
Well, so I'm just going to tell everybody what's coming up, and I'm going to come back and ask about what you're working on at the moment.
Okay.
So just to say, everybody, that we've got, as always, some great things coming up on Goldster. And on Purpose, Passion, Grit, PPG, our Tuesday programme, next guest, Alistair Hicknall, is talking to the footballer Mark Lawrenson, who's a really, really fascinating footballer. He's also been, you know, he's a sports presenter as well. And as always, Alistair himself, being a sports person, is going to bring a really brilliant perspective to that. And then coming up next month after, because Alistair's on the 25th of October, on the 1st of November, Rosie will be talking about her amazing journey. As we know, Rosie, our fabulous presenter, who just happens to be an explorer. How cool is she? And then on the 8th of November, I'm going to be talking to a woman called Carolyn Hornblow, who is a nurse. She's a nurse who's worked in end-of-life care, and she's the author of a book called After a Life-Threatening Diagnosis, What Next? And we're really going to get her opinions as a nurse of what happens in nursing and what kind of things you can do if you've had this terrible diagnosis. And then to stick with the book club, next week on Thursday, Humphrey is talking to Jen Nash, the author of The Big Power of Tiny Connections, How Small Interactions Spark Awesome outcomes. It's going to be a really, really fascinating one. And then on Friday, you've got me and Humphrey, who are talking about both our new books. He's talking about Ice Islands and I'm talking about Dickens and travel. But mostly it's our book club community chat. We're going to try this for the first time. We're not doing a specific book of the month this time. We're going to be talking to you about what you'd like to see on the book club and your own writing, which I know a lot of you have been working on. And then Humphrey is back the following week on the Thursday with James Hanning, the author of Love and Deception. He writes about politicians, criminals and spies who in today's culture might seem interchangeable. And doesn't that seem extremely relevant to today in our crazy, turbulent week? And then on the Friday, he is talking to Linda Shaw, who is the author of Your Brain is Boss, Using Mind Power to Develop Influence, Creativity and Work Satisfaction. And the following week is, of course, Remembrance Week. And I'll be talking to two authors who've written on kind of topical subjects. So on the 10th of November, we're talking to Stephen Barker, who is the author of The Flying Sikh, the story of a World War I fighter pilot, who was just an extraordinary man. And I think it's going to have resonances. We should have got him on at the same time as you, really, Alison. Would have been fascinating to hear about both of these pilots together. And then on the 11th of November, I shall be talking to Tessa Dunlop, Dr. Tessa Dunlop, who is a Sunday Times bestselling author. She's written all sorts of books, including The Bletchley Girls and Army Girls. And she's also written a new book on Elizabeth and Philip, the Queen and Prince Philip. So she's going to come and talk about all of those. So I hope you'll join us for all these exciting upcoming events. So back to you, Alison. I know you've actually attended quite a few of our Goldster events before, haven't you? So
I have, yes.
There's really lots of you're coming on now as our guest. When I first asked Alison to come on and talk to us, she said, oh, that sounds really interesting. And she looked up and every now and then I see her name pop up as a Goldster member, which is really lovely. So Alison, tell us, what are you working on at the moment?
I think I'm going to go back to poetry for a while. I had an idea for a title, Rebel Diamonds, bringing more women out of the shadows. So I'm going to work on that. And then there's a sort of a novel idea niggling at the back of my mind, London-based, really, bringing two histories together.
So. Exciting. And do you think having written this biography and published it, do you think that has given you more confidence in working on novels?
I hope so. I hope so, yes. And I think it's given me the confidence on writing much more extensively, I think, and quickly.
Yeah.
I didn't mention that I had the idea and the pitch and the publisher before I'd written the manuscript, which is probably not the way I'd recommend.
Not the best way, but hey, if it works, it works.
But this time I think I'll have the manuscript ready first.
Yes, yeah. Excellent. We've got a comment here, so exciting to hear. Thank you. Thanks for a lovely interview today. Very fascinating. Thank you so much, Alison. It's been a real joy to have you on today. I'm so glad, as I say, having watched your career ever since we met at St. Mary's University, I've seen it really flower on social media, and I'm very excited about what is coming up for you. This is the book, everybody, Pauline Gower, Pioneering Leader of the Spitfire Women. Really recommend it. Very easy read. You know, not every biography is, but it's a good, easy read and a fascinating subject. And we've got another comment here from Molly, who says, thank you. Great to hear more about the book. Take care, everybody. I will see you next week when I'm back with Humphrey, and Humphrey will be with you on Thursday. And of course, Alistair on Tuesday. Do tell your friends about Goldster. And if you've got friends who are Goldster members who haven't started coming to book club, badger them to come along and come to these sessions as well. Really interesting to hear about these pioneering women. Thank you, Jean. And Kathy says, thank you. So interesting. So take that, Alison.
And a huge thank you to Lucinda for hosting. And thank you very much as well for this opportunity to talk about the book. Thank you.
Well, good luck with it. And we want to find out more about all your events. And everybody, Alison's website is in the chat. So do check her website and look for any upcoming events that might be happening next year near you. So Alison and I will now turn off our videos and I will see you all next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this Goldster podcast, where we aim to bring you great interviews, to expand your world, and to keep you curious. Please look us up at www.goldster.co.uk. That's Goldster spelt G-O-L-D-S-T-E-R. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast.